Chapter 44. 6 days of hearings. For now we see through a glass darkly. Paul, 1907. Dr. Alan McLean Hamilton had the reputation of being the very best alienist this country affords. Despite the fact that he had testified against practitioners of Christian Science in the Brush Will case in New York City in 1901, Mr. Streeter felt that Dr. Hamilton's character and honesty were such that he was the one to make a thorough study of Mrs. Eddy in this case, for his report would stand unquestioned. So the noted alienist spent a month in Concord in midsummer, studying Mrs. Eddy as well as a good deal of her correspondence. It was Monday, August 12th, that Dr. Hamilton called at Pleasant View in company with Mr. Streeter. It is possible that Mrs. Eddy was wearing her crown of diamonds on that day. Dr. Hamilton merely said, quote, "She was simply attired in a dark dress and light sack, relieved by a simple ornament, a diamond brooch," end quote. At one point in their discussion, Mrs. Eddy said that she had no doubt she was going to win in this matter. And as the doctor recorded, quote, "that her followers had done much to help her, and that she would like to have me on her side," end quote. The next day, Tuesday, August 13th, was the first day of the hearing before the masters. By recognized court usage, the counsel for the plaintiff were to have opening and closing, so Chandler took almost all the first day. Near the close of the session, Judge Aldrich said, quote, "I do not ask that the question be answered now, Mr. Streeter, but sometime I shall ask you whether we are to be permitted to hear the statement of Mrs. Eddy in respect to her business affairs," end quote. With a good deal of judicial procedure and over Chandler's objections, it was submitted that Mrs. Eddy would be pleased to have them come to Pleasant View the next day at 2 p.m. Mrs. Eddy was apprised of the events of the day's hearing very quickly, for one of the several Christian Scientists in the courtroom was Calvin Hill, who carried word from General Streeter each day to Mrs. Eddy at Pleasant View. "She always received me at once, apparently waiting for me to come from the courtroom. I have a vivid picture of her, sitting quietly and listening to what I had to report. She reminded me of a gray gull, riding calmly, serenely, on a storm-tossed sea. She had full confidence in the triumph of truth in this trial. As I recall, she once said to me, quote, 'You cannot hurt anyone by telling the truth, and no one can hurt you by telling a lie,'" end quote. The courtroom was full of lies the next morning as counsel for the next friends attacked Christian Science and Mrs. Eddy's sanity. After a morning of argument, it was decided that only Chandler Streeter and a court stenographer would accompany the three masters to Pleasant View at 2 p.m., and that none but the masters was to do any questioning. A few days before, Adelaide Still had heard Mrs. Eddy say to Mr. Fry, quote, "Calvin, are you sure they can't come and take me away without my consent?" end quote. She also wrote to her lawyer, "If you let this case remain as it now is, could the next friends take possession of my person? If they could not, then is it not better to let this suit stand as it is? I fear if you press it, they will get judge to decide it against me and give my person to my enemies, called next friends. And they will take me away from my real friends, students, and thus get rid of me by such means, then fight over my last will. Many times the leader dictated letters that were never sent, and this one to her lawyer was one of those unsent letters. Sometimes she was restrained by God. Sometimes she had further thoughts on the matter, and it is very probable that there were times that her main purpose for the letter was to inform her secretaries and mental workers in the home on an issue. This was an indirect way of instruction that got information to mortal mind without the usual reaction and resistance, and the leader used every conceivable means to accomplish this. She knew that her life and her person were in God's hands alone. But if her students feared losing her, they might be roused to resist the enemy with vigor, which all must learn to do sooner or later. On Wednesday, August 14th, Adelaide Still helped the leader dress for the occasion of the master's visit, which meeting was held in her study. As I looked at her sitting in her chair in the tower window of her study, waiting for them to be ushered into her presence, her face was uplifted and looked clear, calm, and confident. Only the three alienists, masters, and the two lawyers, plus a court stenographer, were actually in the room with her. But the doors were open, and we heard all that was said. At one point during the interview, Mrs. Eddy called Miss Still to get something for her. And as Miss Still recalled, "I have forgotten what she asked me to give her, but because the alienists were sitting in front of her, I went behind her chair and handed the paper to her over her shoulder. As I looked up, I caught the disgruntled look on the opposing lawyer's face, and I knew that he realized that he had lost his case." It has also been recorded that Chandler was later overheard to say, quote, "That woman is smarter than a steel trap," end quote. Mrs. Eddy had been interrupted in the middle of telling the masters about her discovery of Christian Science. And after they had left the room, she sent Adelaide to ask them to return. Mr. Fry brought them back and asked them to be seated. And to Miss Still's amusement, quote, "They had to listen to a brief account of her discovery of Christian Science," end quote. The balance of the afternoon in the courtroom was a vicious attack on Mrs. Eddy's sanity by Chandler's colleagues. For 3 more days, this continued as largely an attack on Christian Science, with introduction of all the damaging evidence they could produce. From such witnesses as Richard Kennedy, Arthur Buswell, and others who had renounced Mrs. Eddy and Christian Science, Chandler repeatedly requested that they be allowed to have alienists examine Mrs. Eddy. Though it is no part of the court record, Mrs. Eddy did give an interview to an alienist employed by the Next Friends, Dr. Henry R. Hopkins of Buffalo, New York. Perhaps Dr. Hopkins' report to Chandler influenced his next move, for the leader made a deep impression upon the doctor, In fact, the impression was so deep and lasting that the doctor's daughter became a lifelong student of Mrs. Eddy's writings. Practically all of the depositions the next friends presented were ruled out by the court, and after 5 days, they had presented little of consequence and had exhausted their subject. It was now time for the defense to be heard. On the 6th day of the hearing, Wednesday morning, August 21st, Senator Chandler was again the first to speak. He said, "May it please the court, it will doubtless be a relief to the masters to be informed that the counsel for the next friends have this day filed with the clerk of the court a motion for the dismissal of the pending suit, and that they hereby withdraw their appearance before the masters without asking from them any finding upon the questions submitted to them by Judge Chamberlain." As soon as Chandler had resumed his seat, Mr. Streeter arose and delivered an impressive and memorable address, asking the masters to proceed with the hearing. But the judge stated that the petition for dismissal left nothing for them to decide. The numerous reporters in the courtroom quickly spread the news that Mrs. Eddy had won. But Mr. Streeter was not the only one perturbed by the lack of testimony on Mrs. Eddy's behalf. Dr. Hamilton was interviewed by a good many of the reporters in attendance at the trial, and he gave them a very interesting and detailed statement regarding Mrs. Eddy's competency and unusual executive ability. Mrs. Eddy had directed the work of her mental workers in connection with the lawsuit, which was to be handled with absolute metaphysics. Calvin Hill recorded that he, quote, was not to outline what the verdict would be, but to know that truth would prevail, end quote. One of her lessons at this time was from Genesis, quote, "Shall not the judge of all the earth do right?" End quote. As Calvin rushed to Pleasant View with the good news on August 21st, he felt that divine mind had directed the verdict, which he was eager to impart to the leader. "Of course I remember best of all the eventful day when I hurried out to Pleasant View and told her that the legal battle was ended and that she had won. When she heard this, she raised her hands from the arms of her chair and dropped them again. She lifted her head, a movement which had become familiar to all of us when she was doing metaphysical work or when she was deeply moved. Her eyes had a far-off look, as if she were seeing the very heart of heaven. The next thing she did greatly impressed Mr. Hill and caused him to think of Jesus' words, quote, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do, end quote. She turned at once to her desk and wrote a letter of overflowing forgiveness to one in whose name the suit had been brought, most likely her son, George Glover. The import of her next step seemed to have gone unnoticed at that time, but it had obviously been planned in advance, awaiting the moment for implementation. The leader released a new edition of Science and Health, with a frontispiece of her portrait and signature facing the title page. This picture appears to be the same one she had given to Arthur Brisbane in June, except with a dark background and the addition of her diamond cross. There must be significance to the fact that she placed this portrait upon a very dark background. Perhaps that bears relationship to the unjust persecution she has been enduring. Or it could represent the thought of Christendom as to her mission and her message, or even the understanding of Christian Scientists regarding her identity and spirituality. Most of her closest students were almost totally blind, very dark, in this area, else Gilbert Carpenter would not have written in later years as previously quoted. Quote, "It is an interesting commentary on human blindness that any of Mrs. Eddy's household should have felt that although they had a great love for her and an appreciation of what was unquestionably good in her life and teaching, it required more or less tolerance on their part to overlook Mrs. Eddy's own impatience and to ignore her lack of appreciation and even criticism of what was done for her through their love and effort." End quote. The leader knew these students' thoughts and their total lack of comprehension. But a mother cannot explain herself or her actions to her children when they are not yet beyond babyhood. Perhaps this dark picture is an explanation. 2 weeks later, the Sentinel for September 7th contained this notice: "A new edition of Science and Health. There is now on sale by the publisher a thoroughly revised edition of Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, upon which the author has expended much care and labor during the past 6 months. In making this revision, Mrs. Eddy has, for the first time, read her book consecutively from cover to cover, quote, in order, end quote, as she writes in the preface, quote, to elucidate her idealism, end quote. This revised edition contains a fine photogravure portrait of Mrs. Eddy, together with a facsimile of her signature. After the collapse of the lawsuit, the leader sent copies of this new edition to a few selected recipients, but probably not before the avalanche of telegrams and letters of congratulation began pouring upon Pleasant View from all corners of the earth. One from England said simply, Frimley, August 22, 1907. Mrs. Eddy, Pleasant View, Concord, New Hampshire. Sincere congratulations. Dunmore. Lord Dunmore and his family had been very active in Christian Science for many years. When the Next Friends suit was inaugurated, he had made a trip to America to ask Mrs. Eddy how he could be of help to her. No one rejoiced more than did he at this victory, and he once again gave public testimony of his wonderful healing in Christian Science. And malicious mind struck back. In less than a week, the London Weekly Times published, quote, "We regret to announce that Lord Dunmore died very suddenly early on Tuesday morning at the Manor House, Frimley, near Camberley," end quote. A cablegram from Pleasant View, dated August 31st, read, "Countess of Dunmore and family, divine love is your ever-present help. You, I, and mankind have cause to lament the demise of Lord Dunmore. But as the Christian Scientist, the servant of God and man, he still lives, loves, labors. Mary Baker G. Eddy. The issue of the Sentinel, which published Mrs. Eddy's cablegram to Lord Dunmore's family, also published a new bylaw. Sudden Decease. Section 2. Now Article 9. If a member of the Mother Church shall decease suddenly, without previous injury or illness, and the cause thereof be unknown, an autopsy shall be made by qualified experts. At midnight of September 25th, the leader was reading what she had so recently added to page 164 of Science and Health on death. If you or I should appear to die, we should not be dead. And this seeming decease, caused by a majority of human beliefs that we must die, would not in the least disprove Christian Science. As she read, she made the following changes in and additions to these four lines, replacing the subjunctive mood with the indicative, changes italicized. If you or I should appear to die, we should not be dead. The seeming decease caused by a majority of human beliefs that man must die or produced by mental assassins does not in the least disprove Christian Science. Quote, the seeming decease does not in the least disprove Christian Science. End quote.